Welcome, everyone. We are now back in session. Do we call the roll after a break? No. Okay. Carla, please call the next item.
Do you want to read both of those items or one at a time?
Yes. Let's read them together.
Okay. Item 453, Transmit East Portland Action Plan 2017 Annual Presentation, and 454, authorize $73,996 total in grant agreements for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, East Portland Action Plan 2017 Civic Engagement Grant Agreements to further community involvement.
Excellent. Thank you. So, colleagues, it's my pleasure to introduce the East Portland Action Plan and Civic Engagement Grant report. I was very pleased to be named EPAP's liaison, as I have a tremendous amount of respect for their work, as well as a shared concern about how we as a city prioritize and make equitable investments across our entire city. EPAP is a model for how civic engagement among diverse populations can make meaningful, lasting impact on our communities. I want to give a special shout out to Laura Wintergreen. Who has been a tireless advocate for raising the voices of East Portland residents. I think her inclusive and accessible style of facilitating EPAP will be made abundantly clear during this presentation, as there are at least 18 people here representing many different communities who will be participating in the presentation. Thank you for everything you do, Laura. And with that, I would like to invite Joanne Hardesty to get. Is this not?
Karen,
okay,
Fisher,
sorry about that. Somebody's in trouble.
It's all good.
I would like to invite Karen Fisher Gray to give the opening remarks and introduce the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here year after year for the annual EPAP report. City Council. Good afternoon, Portland City Council. My name is Dr. Karen Fisher Gray, and I've been the superintendent of the Park Rose School District for the last 10 years. I am also the chair of the Oregon Educator Equity Advisory Council, whose role it is to attract and retain a diverse Oregon education workforce. Thank you for allowing me the time to introduce this wonderful group of people to you today and to have the opportunity to tell you about the great work that the East Portland Action Plan is doing. I've had the privilege and pleasure of working with many people living in East Portland on EPAP as a community-based social and economic equity project since it began. EPAP began the year I came to Portland in 2007 with Mayor Potter and then County Chair Ted Wheeler. While my attendance at the monthly meetings has dropped, I attend the quarterly technical assistance countywide meetings with the City of Portland and remain committed to its work to further livability and economic equity in our part of Portland. As a five-year planning and sustainability commissioner from 2010 to 2015, I was an EPAP champion, and I will remain so forever. EPAP's leadership and guidance is on how to strategically address community-identified issues, and to allocate resources to improve livability and prevent displacement. This is our vision, and this is our work. The 2017 strategic priorities, shown in Exhibit B, are established annually by full consensus of the EPAP. And if you want to know what full consensus means, it means that every single member of this giant committee, it's the biggest committee you ever saw, one person can actually stop an action. So everyone has to agree or find a way to agree. It's really quite amazing and interesting to watch. This year's strategic priorities will be addressed by the speakers as outlined in Exhibit A, which is your agenda for today. Our strategic priorities range from civic engagement of a vast array of people of different races, cultures, ethnicities, and gender expressions to economic development for East Portland, housing, parks, transportation, as well as how to prevent involuntary displacement, a topic well discussed in both the comp plan and the Portland plan. Involuntary displacement prevention recommendations for East Portland were first developed by three EPAP subcommittees, civic engagement, economic development, and housing, over a 9-month study period. The subcommittee cross-reviewed the recommendations, and a draft was translated into 8 different languages, with community engagement liaisons identifying and reviewing the recommendations with community stakeholders for the month before a community meeting review. 200 people were in attendance, 90% people of color, or first language different than English. Based upon the community review, the recommendations changed, and the full general EPAP approved the document you now have as Exhibit C. The speakers to follow will address Exhibit D, 6-month update of the 2017 strategic priorities and involuntary displacement prevention recommendations. In addition, they will call out what support we need from you, City Council, in order to move forward on these issues. These are very near and dear to us. Based upon the annual geographic budget mapping done, the City Budget Office, with the help of Nick Salvi, produced a 6-year city spending analysis document, also Exhibit E, that demonstrates progress and investment in East Portland parks. Some transportation progress, but an inability to meet fair share, let alone equitable spending, and severe underspending from the Housing Bureau. This continues to be a crucial issue for people living east of 82nd Avenue. We really encourage you to review Exhibit E, the 6-year city spending analysis document, as it has been a big priority of EPAPs to attain parity of spending across all of the City of Portland. The EPAP 2017 Strategic Priorities, Exhibit B, asks that A, the city set a goal that East Portland attain parity with other parts of the city in developing and maintaining public facilities and capital spending by encouraging prioritization of the projects in East Portland where they are sorely needed and have been sorely needed for a decade or more. This, in my opinion, is called equity. B, institutionalization of the geographic mapping of city spending, that this information we actively reviewed and consider when establishing city budgets. This started with Mayor Adams, a big champion of East Portland and also of our schools, and we began on a good foot with this through the city auditor's office, and I remember that first meeting where we had the city auditor come out to an EPAP meeting, put stuff up all across the wall, and show us where the money was spent, and show us geographically by mapping where the services were across the city. It was quite eye-opening, and it was great evidence of what we were looking for. There was an annual report to EPAP by the city showing geographic mapping of city spending and city services, and then it fell away. It's very discouraging. Letter C, develop the equivalent of a quadrant plan for East Portland. As a planning and sustainability commissioner, I was very aware of the central city quadrant plans. During my time on PSC, I asked many times, where's the quadrant plan for East Portland? I never got an answer. Millions and millions of dollars are involved in the 4 quadrant plans. And believe me, I get why the development of the central city is important. But I don't ever see anything put into planning specifically for East Portland in quite the same manner. And I was even told, well, the quadrant plans go all the way to Southeast 12th. That's nice. I live on 132nd. So, frankly, Southeast 12th does not go far enough. So, where's the plan? Where do we get the funding for EPAP? So at a bare minimum, please fund the funding for EPAP. Letter D, please continue ongoing funding of the EPAP advocacy until our action plan is completely implemented. The $200,000 or $300,000 the city gives EPAP is money more than well spent because we leverage those dollars. It is never a one-to-one. It is always leveraged for many more dollars than what we get. It's kind of like the school districts. You get your money's worth out of our fantastic advocate, Laura Wintergreen, without whom none of this would have happened. If funds are small, but they're powerful, and they give grants to the community, something you're going to hear about later, It pays for translation into our many languages. It is teeny tiny money. Please recognize what your dollars are investing in, and in my opinion, stop making us have to beg for them every year. I just want to make sure that they get into the budget, and maybe they're already in the budget, but make sure they're in the budget and they stay there so that people don't have to keep apologizing for or making up reasons to keep it there.
May I just interrupt for a second? It is in the ongoing, for this year and last year, no even mention of it in the only budget.
Two big
hearing.
Thumbs up, Commissioner Fritz. We are delighted.
Check that one off at least.
Check it off. Right on, check it off. And of course, you know what we're going to say?
Can we have more?
More. And so I'm very grateful, and so thank you for letting us know that. And that's what I have to say as far as introduction. So that's enough from me. The following people will speak to the updates and next steps. I would like to introduce Nancy Ariola, who will speak on civic engagement subcommittee work, and Kristen Ross and Katie Larcel, who will speak about economic development.
Dr. Gray, can I just observe before you give up the chair that we have a lot of school districts that are in the city of Portland, some bigger than others. During my service on the council dating back to 2008, no superintendent has spent more time in this building educating the city council about the needs of a school district than you have.
Thank you.
And I thank you for your leadership.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying so.
Good afternoon. My name is Natalie Arreola. I'm a member of the Civic Engagement Subcommittee. Some of the strategic priorities that we've been working on and the Civic Engagement Subcommittee has been to engage ethnic communities and neighborhood activities, to provide overhead funding for translation languages, to remove barriers and improve messages and invitations. So some of the work that we've been doing around that has been some of our members, Andrea Govea, Emily Larraga, and Natalia Sobolevskaya, have represented EPAP at the City of Portland Office of Neighborhood Involvement, the ONI, budget advisory committees. With their active advocacy, we've been able to have ONI to request funding for translation, interpretation, and childcare as an add-on package in the ONI budget request for fiscal year 2017-2018. We also had civic engagement subcommittee members have also met with the City of Portland Equity and Human Rights Office to advocate for and provide input into development of a program to be provided by the city with overhead funding. And we've also worked with, have had committee members working with the operation committee members as well, and have met with the city, the mayor and with you all to advocate for overhead funding, interpretation, translation, childcare, and transit assistance. Our other strategic priority that we've been working with around doing advocacy around has been increasing funding and technical assistance for organizations that desire to establish two new ethnicities or languages every 2 years to strengthen an existing ethnically based community health workers programs and to establish racially and ethnically representatives community oversight of community health worker programming. So EPAP Civic Engagement Subcommittee members have from various community, racial and ethnic communities have actively supported the expansion of community health workers from including the expansion from of Latino community health workers, African-American, African, Native American, Slavic, Iraqi, Zomi, Myanmar, Burmese, Chinese, Vietnamese, and Tongan. EPAP Civic Engagement Subcommittee has had a series of meetings with Multnomah County Health Department as well. Multnomah County Health Department Capacitation Program, Oregon Community Health Worker Association, Oregon Community Health Worker Research and Education Consortium, and Oregon Public Health Institute. All of the above support the strategic priority. With our have been able to organize together. EPAP Operations Committee members stressed this priority when meeting with Multnomah County Chair Kofori and Commissioner Smith, Stegman, and Vega Peterson. Commissioner Smith requested more information and a specific proposal. The following was provided. In response, in the response to the commissioner's question, which was, what is the fiscal need to expand the community health worker program to address the following EPAP's 2017 strategic priority set by the EPAP Civic Engagement Committee? We said $100,000 provide one FTE in operational costs for ethnic / language specific curriculum development, and two culturally specific and language specific 90-hour trainings for 25 people a year. This not only provides for a more inclusive dissemination of health information and service, but the training has a significant potential to lead to accreditation and living wage employment for these trained. The above proposal was also shared with Chair Kifori and Commissioner Stegman and Vega Peterson. The EPAP Civic Engagement Committee encouraged the Oregon Public Health Institute BUILD program to pursue the integration of community health workers in the project and to encourage the integration of community health workers in the practice of their health industries partners. The BUILD project has hired two community health workers to support the Powellhurst-Gilbert neighborhood-based project. The community health workers that were hired are bilingual with capacity to speak English, Spanish, and Vietnamese. So those are communities that were being served now in that area. The next steps for advocacy is that we recommend is to encourage the City Council to provide overhead funding in this year's budget for interpretation, translation, childcare, and bus passes accommodations. In response to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement requests for this funding as a bureau add-on package, the City Budgeting Office recommends that accommodations be considered part of the outreach engagement costs, and the bureaus should prioritize resource to achieve equitable outcomes. To the degree of the overall outreach and engagement outcomes are not meeting targets, the bureaus should request additional engagement resources. EPAP contends that the should means very little when allocation spending occurs, but if bureaus have a percentage of their budgets allocated through overhead funding, it should incentivize them to take advantage of the resource. EPAP spent about $20,000 of their budget on these items last year, and if it's just put into the overhead funding, it could really keep those programs going and consider serving the community. Our involuntary displacement recommendation is to continue having community involvement and decisions made around displacement as well. Okay, thank you very much.
I'd just like to take a moment to say that we did get that ad package for accommodations.
You got it for ONI, but not overhead funding.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so, ONI did make, which was wonderful.
So we should be able to help at least? Or
you can be advocating for it being bureau-wide, because ONI certainly can't do all that work for the entire city.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And I apologize. Nick Coble is not here, and he was actually replacing Kristen, who moved to Montana. So I'm going to try to step up and talk about economic development. I'm going to just present our progress, and then Katie Larcel will speak to what we need in support. So on your strategic priorities, J is connect East Portland residents to family wage employment. East Portland Action Plan members have worked very actively with the Columbia Corridor and in advocating for north-south connectors to get our community to living wage jobs. Given that we have the highest density of immigrant refugee communities, manufacturing jobs can provide family wage, but there is no way for them to get to those manufacturing jobs and to get there in a timely fashion. So we've been doing a significant portion of advocacy with TriMet and with our partners at PBOT to make it a priority to have these north-south connectors on 162nd was prioritized and 148th. And I must say I honor Division Midway Alliance. Well, 148th would serve their project. They, too, said 162nd has the more density and is more important to start with. We do appreciate the work that has been done on 122nd, but even that work is not getting people all the way to the Columbia Corridor. The next strategic priority is K, maximize East Portland's economic benefits from public projects. We worked very actively on community benefits agreements with the support of our allies, Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity. We've had success with Portland Parks, two of the projects that they're working with. We asked for integration of local hire as well as DBEs, and to see that people from East Portland are benefiting from projects in East Portland, and we're again developing living wages in the area. We have also been working with Metro, talking about projects that they're bringing to the area, and we did extensive review of the Community Equity Inclusion Plan by the Office of Equity and gave written input in track changes and an overall statement on that. Kim Marks will be on the Community Advisory Committee for the Division Bus Rapid Transit Project and will advocate for local hiring and local business use. So we continue to be advocates in those veins. L is promote catalyst workforce development projects and partner with the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiatives and other urban renewal economic development efforts. We have worked very, the East Portland Action Plan Economic Development Subcommittee has regular attendance from all the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative members. And in fact, one of our co-chairs at this point, Mei Jung, is with the Jade District, and Kate is with the Historic Park Rose. So they're co-chairing the committee. EPAP has had representation on the Gateway Discovery Park project, which includes mixed-use income complex with retail on the ground floor. And the contractor is requesting additional tax increment finance funds. NPIs and Main Streets have developed a unified advocacy strategy for elected officials. The strategy is designed to bring sustainability to our organizations, and EPAP has been fully supportive of that and using system development charge fees in developments in the neighborhood prosperity initiative areas. EPAP has continued to advocate for the need to stop remonstrances and not reassert that. We know that sidewalks, well, you can have transit. If you can't get people to safely walk to that transit, they're not going to use that transit, as well as if it is not frequent. You can't spend 2 hours to get to your job both ways. How can you be an active member of your community, and how can you support your family under those conditions? So there has been in the past, PBOT, Portland Bureau of Transportation, has allowed for remonstrances for new developments, saying, well, we don't want a half a block of sidewalk. Well, what we found is when you're looking at funding from PBOT to infill sidewalks, we've been fairly successful at getting sidewalk infill, which means, yes, that half a block will then mean you're just infilling. But if you suddenly say, no, you have to do all these miles of sidewalks, that gets put off because it is so expensive. So what we're advocating is, no, have all development in East Portland put in the sidewalks that they're required to put in, and then we can face the issues of infill later. So, and then Oregon Solutions is involved with Lentz Job Creation Project linked to the Lentz floodplain, and we have been supportive of that work. M is established the Gateway Education Economic Development Center, and we did bring Mayor Wheeler to the East Portland Action Plan meeting in December. As he spoke of the work that he saw as upstream in terms of economic development, we realized, and Hunksa Chongthavan from ERCO spoke to, we have a solution. The Gateway Education Economic Development Center addressed every one of the issues that he raised in what was needed as an upstream action. It was also in the Portland plan and was to have been implemented within 5 years. And quite honestly, the city, Katie will talk more about it, but the city hasn't stepped up on this. We're excited that the council, as it sits now, might be willing to pursue this more fully. And we do have a committee, and they're going to be seeking. We will continue to talk about this as we have in the past when we meet with you individually and with the mayor. In terms of involuntary displacement, living wage provisions, the Jade advocates for a $15 an hour livable wage and ask local businesses to do the same. EPAP has officially advocated for at least a $13 wage. local hiring. Again, we mentioned the community benefit agreements, the same with minority contracting, commercial stabilization and commercial rent stabilization. Rosewood Initiative is doing an appreciative inquiry and will survey electeds, businesses, and community members to assess what is a useful tool for stabilization. We are seeing and have been seeing for at least 4 years now many of our ethnic businesses having to leave East Portland. We had a 13-year business in East Portland, and the rents went up, and they had to leave. It was Anoush Deli. We are seeing that more and more with our ethnically-based businesses, and we think that is egregious, and we want to see forms of stabilization. Community Reinvestment Act. We would love the city's support to actively pursue that those dollars that hospitals have and banks have be applied locally to East Portland where the need is the greatest. We are working with Metro on transit-oriented development, and I will now pass to Katie.
May I just ask a quick question or
yes.
two? On the remonstrances for sidewalks, is that everywhere or only on the arterials? Because we adopted something last year that said that if you were in a not in a problem street, that mm-hmm. you could pay fee in lieu so that the sidewalks would get done on the arterials.
And that is what, and we're saying people living on that even local street, if you're developing something, they have to walk down that local street to get to the arterial. And the idea that the money is being saved to then be used on the arterials has never manifested.
Well,
when they did remonstrances, but they did remonstrances before you voted on that for years.
Yes, I know. It's the same thing in Southwest.
And they just never manifested in an actuality.
I think we've only just started that program, though, mm-hmm. so I think that's worth some more conversation.
Good.
And then secondly, about community benefits agreements, mm-hmm. there were some concerns I've heard about a preference for union jobs, and that might be in conflict with small businesses in East Portland who might not be unionized because they're family businesses.
And in terms of the community benefits agreements, because they're with municipal projects, again, it's a matter of saying it will be a living wage as opposed to having a plan that says, well, we'll look at hiring locally and then local hires getting paid the minimum wage, which will not support their families, where the agreement stipulates you will pay. And the unions are willing to work with communities. And then, of course, the purchasing aspect of that you're going to purchase locally. If there are companies in East Portland that can provide that, again, that provides those small businesses mm-hmm. with significant income.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying.
May I just add a comment, too, and thank you, or two things. One is I appreciate you calling out the Columbia Corridor, and I appreciate you calling out all the jobs along the harbor. I think we would welcome a representative from EPAP on the Superfund Community Outreach Task Force, because that's $1 billion coming through our community. It'll be the largest environmental, regulatory, and potentially employment project. Think of it as a stimulus. And just like East Portland often works in the harbor, as part of the working harbor, let's try to capture as many of those jobs. So I'll follow up with you on that.
Thank you.
And the other thing, to the point of the conversation you just had with my colleague, I just want to acknowledge that there is some conversation that's percolating about how to bring down the cost of affordable housing. And three ideas have been floated. One is going backwards on opportunity, so not building in places that have existing infrastructure and opportunities, which would be, I think, a disaster. Number two, backing off of our sustainability values, so not making building green. But number three, and the one where you potentially have the greatest savings at the greatest cost, is backing off family wage jobs. So if we seek to build affordable housing for low-income families, but we don't pay the workers a living wage, that's a problem. So keep your eye on that, because those are three ideas that when you hear about bringing down the cost of affordable housing, here's a little secret. It won't happen by just reducing the time that you spend permitting the project. The savings come in changing existing policies, and those are the three policies which at least have been raised by some.
Yes, and what I would say is, as Karen mentioned earlier, the living wage provision and such support came after review from our housing committee saying, no, we need to have community benefits that pay living wage because it's intersectional. it must all happen. You have to provide wages for people to sustain living and support their families, and then to move into other housing and make that affordable housing affordable for the next family. So we're in agreement.
Thank you.
Hello, commissioners. I'm Katie Larcel, as some of you know, and I'm also on the Planning and Sustainability Commission, but I kind of cut my teeth on East Portland Action Plan, and I attend the Economic Development Subcommittee so that it will inform my work on the Planning and Sustainability Commission. And what I'm going to be doing is talking about what we're asking of you in terms of the items that the Economic Development Committee is working on. Then we need you to work on some of them too. And in terms of the J, connect East Portland residents to family wage employment by removing barriers, well, we encourage the use of transportation demand management funds and City of Portland partnership influence and transportation investment to secure frequent north-south transit service that connects Columbia Corridor family wage jobs, shift jobs, to the people who want to fill those jobs. And the promised service on 122nd has not yet been fully established on Columbia Corridor, and buses are needed on 162nd and on 148th. Now, the our K priority, maximize East Portland's economic benefits from public projects. We encourage the establishment of community benefit agreements, and you've been asking questions about that. We want that on all City of Portland projects of $1 million or more, and these agreements would include local hire and purchase agreements when being built in East Portland, and citywide should prioritize areas of the city most employment and income deficit. And for L priority, promote catalyst workforce development projects in East Portland in partnership with East Portland Neighborhood Prosperity Networks, urban renewal districts, and economic development efforts. Gateway is a 2040 regional center, but it is still undeveloped. Small manufacturing is an appropriate living wage response to the needs of East Portland residents, and city staff need to think first of East Portland when recruiting businesses to this city. Also, the city should continue, well, as we just talked about, the remonstrance, and it sounds like there's some conversation that needs to happen on that, so I won't repeat that one. And then for the M goal, establish the Gateway Education Economic Development Center. Now, I was really going to be looking directly at Ted Wheeler when I talked about this one, and I want to say
I think
that
he knew that, so he he flew to California. So,
and so I was thinking that since he's not here, do you guys have that policy in some committees where when the person is gone, everybody else assigns them that role? Anyway, if that's the case, then I'd like you to put your heads together and do that. So we ask that the city take a convening role in building the partnerships that will establish this much-needed integration of a first-floor multicultural entrepreneurial incubator opportunity, 9 through 12 public education training in the health industry, manufacturing, and possibly construction, evening adult workforce training, affordable housing, and City of Portland Bureau relocation or office space to help fund the whole thing. This is the vision of the center. And this project is in the Portland Plan, and as a member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, I just got an update of that plan. And on page after page, there's the progress of these different projects that the Portland Plan committed the city to. And there's a big red goose egg on this one. And the red goose egg means absolutely nothing has occurred on this project.
And that's to be fair, we tried, but
shame.
It didn't come to fruition. I agree. That,
yeah.
You know, and I, just because we weren't successful with moving the Parks Bureau, I agree that we still need to be looking at it, particularly when the whole Gateway Transit area is redeveloped.
And I'm so pleased that you said that, Amanda, because that is it, because it's a project that's been around for a long time, but it is still very much alive.
Well, wait, just wait till the Discovery Park is done, because I think that's going to be the catalyst, because people are going to want to go there. And then, ooh, is that lot available? I hope that's going to happen.
Yes. So Metro Planning and Development Grant Program funds could be sought to develop this concept. It is perfect for STEAM funding and Community Reinvestment Act funding. School districts and community partners remain supportive of the effort. It would change many lives if that was in place, and it would change Gateway. So that's the one that's really close to my heart. The next item that I want to speak about is N, which is commercial stabilization and commercial rent stabilization, which Laura mentioned. East Portland has been losing our small race, ethnic, and cultural-specific businesses due to rent and just higher prices. We need the support of the city to assess and establish useful tools to support stabilization. EPAP has suggested that Venture Portland expand to include not just geographic but business association members, but much like the diversity and civic leadership partners, to include race, ethnic, and cultural specific business association members. Sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. So that's we're done here for economic development. And now I'd like to introduce three powerful women, Frieda Christopher, Linda Robinson, and Arlene Kimura. And Frieda will be talking about housing. Linda Parks, surprise, surprise. And Arlene Kimura, transportation. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've never heard us called three powerful women before.
Commissioners, thank you for having us here today. My name is Frieda Christopher, and I'm co-chair of the East Portland Action Plan Housing Subcommittee, as well as serving on the David Douglas School Board. First, I would like to thank you for your focus on affordable housing and homelessness issues and your advocacy at the state level in the support of affordable housing and the tools for anti-displacement and tenant rights. The Housing Subcommittee has been very busy over the last year. We have met with city, county, metro, and state elected officials to advocate for adequate affordable housing and for anti-displacement tools such as lifting the ban on rent control and the elimination of no-cause evictions, which will help stabilize the housing for East Portland residents, and also balance the affordable and accessible housing supply throughout Portland. We also have joined with the Partners of Affordable Home Ownership to advocate for funding for expanding home ownership for moderate and low income and people of color. When it comes to anti-displacement tools, we did advocate and support the inclusionary zoning program here at the city. We are currently advocating at the state level. In fact, just sent off a letter yesterday to the Senate committee for the rent control and no-cause eviction tenants' rights. One of our strategic priorities for the past 2 years has been the pilot project for the rehabilitation program in East Portland, in which $1.5 million was proposed in the last 2 years of the housing budget. The committee's advocacy for this program was because we were seeing the housing crisis impacting East Portland. East Portland has a significant amount of privately owned affordable housing, or should I say we did have a significant amount. Rents are constantly going up. We felt that in the short term, with this program, we could increase the amount of regulated affordable housing for 10 years while efforts were made to construct additional affordable multifamily units. Unfortunately, in 2016 mayor's budget, it was reduced to less than $500,000. The slow implementation of this program has been part of the issue. But we are disappointed that as we get ready to support the program when it's presented for Council's approval, again in the 2017 budget, a significant cut has been made. In fact, it appears that the full funding of $1.5 million has been redirected to other programs. As mentioned, Nick Sovey, a member of the Housing Committee, has mapped how each of the larger bureaus have spent their funds each year since 2012. And how much has been directed to East Portland when compared with the city average. Unfortunately, whereas parks and transportation has had significant increased investment in East Portland to reach equity, since 2013, the Housing Bureau has declined its investment in East Portland. For the 2016 fiscal year, it had fallen to 49% of the city average, from a high of 91% around 2013. The proposed rehabilitation program funding was a step to change the disinvestment in East Portland by the Housing Bureau. We understand the competing demands on the city budget and within the Housing Bureau, the competing programs and hard decisions that need to be made. We just request that when making these hard decisions, that equity for East Portland is part of the decision-making process. Funding in East Portland has been neglected for decades, and now that 26% of the population is living in East Portland, the City Council can no longer ignore the needs that are there with the large portion of the residents being vulnerable. We continue to want to work collaboratively with the Housing Bureau and the City. We also want to stress that East Portland is starting to gentrify, and we want to make sure investments are made in East Portland so displacement can be mitigated. It will be less costly to be proactive in providing long-term affordable housing now than to try to buy back as what is being done in North and Northeast Portland. I would be negligent as a school board member if I didn't mention one of the most important factors of stabilizing housing. Research has proven that stable housing is an important factor for children's success in school. They are more likely to reach benchmark in reading by third grade and thus more likely to graduate on time. If we don't stop displacement in East Portland now, the next move for our residents is out of our city. As a housing committee, we will continue to advocate for equitable funding for additional affordable housing with a focus on ongoing funds, one-time funds, and we will be asking for 26% of the housing bond funds to be spent in East Portland, equal to what the population percentage is. As a committee, we will also continue to work with the city and other local jurisdictions to advocate for legislative changes to make it possible for our local entities to have the anti-displacement tools they need to handle this housing crisis. Again, thank you for your time and your support on these important housing issues.
Good afternoon. First, I wanted to. My name is Linda Robinson. I'm with the East Portland Parks Coalition, and a number of other things. Anyway, so I wanted to start by saying what a pleasure it has been for me to work with the East Portland Action Plan. As most of you know, I've been involved with civic engagement, public involvement for maybe 30 years or so, and this is probably, working with these folks has been the most productive, most satisfying of all those public engagement that I've been involved in. We're learning in East Portland how to do something more than just complain that nobody ever gives us anything. We're learning how to be proactive. We're learning how to represent our area on commissions and committees and come in and testify. So it's really rewarding to be here with this group of people. So I represent parks. I'm a parks representative on the EPAP. It's not an EPAP committee because it existed before EPAP existed. elected. Amanda helped us form it before she was elected. So that group has existed for 15 years. We picked two strategic priorities to focus on this past year. One was to implement the existing park master plans. And, of course, one is under construction and nearly finished now. That's which was called the Beach Property, now Lewitt View. We thank Amanda and the Parks Bureau for providing some SDC funds, so of $6 million, so we could get started on the master plan for Park Lane. That work will get underway very soon, and we're excited about that. We're still waiting and still advocating for funds eventually for a Clatsop Butte as well. So that's the first one. The second strategic priority was to complete the design and planning work for Gateway Green Park, which is a subject dear to my heart, and I wore my Gateway Green shirt especially for today. But we appreciate that's a project that's been in the works for more than a decade. We are pleased to say that Friends of Gateway Green, we were awarded a Metro Capital Grant 3 years ago with a provision that we had to raise $2 million of match in order to get the $1 million of Metro Grant. We didn't quite make our $2 million, but again, Parks stepped up and made up the difference and gave us some more so that now we have enough to actually build the whole park. Construction started last October. The initial work is actually being done by Friends of Gateway Green through a non-park use permit. We've hired a nationally known trail builders. Some bike trails are being built, bike jumps, pump tracks, bicycle skills area. These are under construction now, and they will be finished in just a few weeks. And I want to invite all of you to our big opening event when the gates will be unlocked on June 24th. We have an event from 11 to 4 on that day, and it's going to have a lot of bicycle-oriented things because that's the part that's finished now, but we're going to have a lot of non-bicycle, family-friendly things going on that day as well. So the Friends of Gateway Green, we raised cash at in-kind of over $1 million, but we are actually spending on the construction of this part of the park. We have spent about $180,000 now. It'll be about $230,000 spent by the time we open on June 24th.
What time of the day was that?
Pardon?
What time is the grand opening?
The grand opening is from 11 to 4, and we're going to have a ceremony at 1:30 that day.
Sit down.
Okay. And construction is moving forward. We're really excited about opening. The park will actually be constructed over a period of 4 years. Once we finish this part, we're using the crowdfunding money and several grants that FOG got from foundations to build the bicycle part. Starting in July, construction gets turned over to Parks, and they will construct the rest of it. So the final drawings and plans are underway right now. We thank you for assigning Ross Swanson as the project manager. He's been wonderful to work with. And having been at PBOT, he's also able to work with the other bureaus quite well. That's working out quite well for us. In terms of what we need, well, next we need to continue advocating to get money to implement the other master plans that are in existence. And the other thing we need for Gateway Green is the continued support, with a park bureau. But also, we're still working on some access issues that have really cost us a lot of money in this early part of the construction because we don't have very good access to bring in large construction vehicles, and we have to pay railroad flaggers every time we want to bring something in at like $800 to $1,000 a day. So we have some plans. It's been funded to bring in the T-hop and the under 205 crossing, which will help. But there's also the bridge on the north end that's built by ODOT and controlled by the railroad. But we have plans to put a new ramp off of that will not take us into the railroad right-of-way. So we really need help to get that access point. And when that's done, it also will help connect the I-205 to trails that go north as well. So PBOT is interested. ODOT is also interested. So we need to have a joint project to try to get that access point resolved.
So on parks this year, if I could just give you some more things to think about and do. At your request, EPAP's request, we did allocate money to Leech Botanical Garden for building out their master garden.
That's right. I should have, but that wasn't one of our strategic priorities.
And I knew it wasn't. So when I was asked to give the SDC money, I did. The fact that EPAP did say that yes, supporting this.
It is one of the items on our plan, but we didn't know that we might be able to get money.
But just to think about, you mentioned Clatsop Butte, which we've got the master plan. It's not done yet. As you know, we're doing three master plans, well, four really.
Yes.
Currently, with the 150th and Division, Mill Parks, Midland Park, and Wilkes. So as these master plans get done, I will be looking to EPAP and the Parks Committee to, is Clatsop Butte still your first choice, or because it's been in line, or are some of these others of more urgency? So just, be thinking about that, please.
And that's a discussion that this is an ongoing discussion with East Portland Parks Coalition, and we try to make sure everybody's aware that, we need as a group to talk about and decide kind of how these priorities will go.
And sometimes it's due to opportunities. The Friends of Leech Garden were willing to do a lot of fundraising. So, and as you said, you mentioned the $1 million from Metro.
Right.
There's no way I'm leaving $1 million on the table.
We didn't want to not get the $1 million from Metro.
Thank you very much.
Linda, can I just add that it's your nature to deflect and to thank everyone else for the work that you've been instrumental to do. But the truth is, had you and Ted Gilbert not birthed the idea and stuck with it, we would not be celebrating these wins around Gateway Green. So thank you for your work.
And it actually came out of the Gateway Urban Renewal process. I mean, that's how the discussion of what can we do started, and eventually, maybe we could have a park.
It still would not have gotten to first base without you and your tenacious leadership.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, councilors, commissioners. I get to do the transportation update. My name is Arlene Kimura, and I live in East Portland, and I'm one of the transportation walks that populate that part of town. The EPAP transportation strategic priorities include fully funding the East Portland in motion. We have many projects in process and others in the planning stage. We have some ways to go on implementing the complete Outer Powell concept design, but we are making progress. With a focus on Vision Zero, the red light cameras, and the installation of more rapid flashing beacons, as well as works on the bikeway, there has been progress on alternative transportation safety for community members. All of this has been with the efforts of PBOT staff, and we thank them for the very cooperative spirit that they have shown us. Sometimes it takes a little bit of nudging, but they are really very helpful when pushed. And I want to make sure that we thank the staff for doing that kind of work. At the same time, we are still working on the MOU for the locally preferred alternate for the Division Street high-capacity transit. There are issues for all of our East Portland partners that need resolution for a more holistic approach. In addition, we are beginning work on the proposal of the possible TriMet bond on the Southwest Corridor light rail to include addressing the orphan highways of East Portland, the North-South transit in East Portland, and the housing displacement in East Portland. Next, I would like to reintroduce to you the idea of EPAP's municipal partnership process. The partnership model has been a tremendous success with community members and municipal agencies working together to execute a very specific program with funding from EPAP. The following speakers will be talking about how a municipal partnership has worked for their organization. Sergeant Dave Abramson from Portland Police Bureau, Kelly Devlin and Orlinda Vansell, and a student from the David Douglas High School District on interpreter training. Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Kelly Devlin. I'm the director of ESL and English as a Second Language in the David Douglas School District. We are so grateful for the opportunity to share with you the goals and objectives of our student interpreters training class at David Douglas High School. Since October, we have been piloting this project. Our interpreting class meets after school twice a week. Our class is open to high school students who have demonstrated strong language proficiency skills in both their native language and English. This pilot project is dependent on a strong partnership with support from both EPAP and Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities has been our side-by-side partner in planning the logistics and providing the instructors for our after-school class. One of our instructors, Selena Hoy, is in the audience with us today supporting us. Our goals and objectives for this project this year was, one, to establish an opportunity to highlight our students' native language skills as an asset. In David Douglas, we are striving to create a culture where students' bilingual skills are appreciated, valued, and treasured. The second one is to provide our students with the opportunity to explore a potential pathway into our community workforce. And three, to teach and expose our students to the beginning features and techniques that professional interpreters use. Our hopes in year one were very simple. One, we wanted to know if students were interested in taking the class. Two, we wanted students to have an opportunity to work with community partners and experts, and we were able to do that. And three, we wanted our students to have informal opportunities to practice these skills by serving as student bilingual ambassadors in our schools. Our hopes, we're starting to brainstorm and imagine, and like anything, it's a clean slate, so we start thinking about all the things that we can do at our high school. So some of the things are, would we be able to turn this after-school class into a school day class? How would we do that? We want to be able to have a certified staff member possibly take some CTE certification and interpreting training so that we could offer it during the school day. And that way, our second language students have more accessibility to achieving some CTE credit for graduation. We are trying to make sure that they stay connected to people in the community and in the field. And two, we are looking to figure out what kinds of other supports this class might need. So we're exploring some of these classes in other regions. There's one in particular that we are studying in Seattle, where they have been very successful and have received some national publication exposure. I'd like to introduce Khan Lee, who is a senior at David Douglas High School. She is one of our members of our interpreting class. She joined our David Douglas family as a freshman, and now she's a senior, just several weeks away from graduating, but she's joining us today to share a little bit on the student perspective of the class.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. My name is Khan Lee. I am a current member of the interpreting class, and I am really grateful for the opportunity to participate to the class, because as a student who has an international background like me, I have been doing interpreting for my family and for my friends and community. At first, I didn't know that to be a trained interpreter is this hard. Because I always confident about my interpreting skills before taking the class, but I didn't know that I have to be very professional and have to know more and the skills to be able to interpret for the community and for my family also. Before taking the class, I had a misconception that people who speak two languages or more are able to interpret already. But actually, when I throw myself to a video and then I try to do simultaneous interpreting for my mom, and that was a hard and difficult to to be able to interpret and to follow the flow, the voice of the people. As a student, I think I really like the idea to put the class into regular school, because most students can only stay in the school instead of after school, and it is kind of really inconvenient for the students. As a person who have been using interpreters for family and for both medical appointments or legal appointment, I have seen a lot of interpreters who are both professional or